Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and I have discovered a fun new escape from the daily grind, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has hundreds of social casino-style games and it's all free to play anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So get to chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Spring is sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
Caroline, Willie, D-Mays, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, and The Game Nashville app. You can watch us streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. Our video streaming is brought to you by Superbook, and we are live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studios. Ask D-Mays in 30 minutes. Get those questions in for D-Mays, and you will win a nice little prize. But first, I want to get into some Titans news, and it may seem from the outside looking in like it's not a big deal, but I do think it could be indicative of a bigger deal or maybe a bigger change that we are going to see within the Titans organization. But it came out last night that the Titans have not renewed their longtime equipment manager, Paul Noska's, his contract. He's been with the Tennessee Titans for 40 years, going all the way back to the Houston Oilers organization. D-Mace, you knew Paul Hoskins. You know him.
Yeah.
From Hoss. Your playing days with the Tennessee Titans. Just kind of your initial reactions and your thoughts on that.
Yeah, Hoss was young when I got there, and everybody, you know, that whole team was young. But yeah, Paul, I'm calling him Paul. Hoss. Hoss was, you know, he started very young there with the Houston Oilers, made the transition here to Nashville, eventually took over as head equipment guy. You know, him and Will Sheridan, you know, they were together my whole 8 years there and here in Nashville. And Hoss was just a good guy, man. He was, you know, his younger days, he was, you know, he was all about the business. But he never separated, you know. Sometimes I think, you know, equipment guys, and I, you know, you ran into this in college, and it was, you know, this is my stuff, and you can only get one pair of socks or two pair of socks, and that was it. Don't come back. And that's how I was in college. And I'm thinking that's how it's going to be when I get to the NFL, the same way. And it just wasn't that way. Now, you had to earn your stripes, you know. You had to earn. You just couldn't walk back there and start grabbing stuff. You know, Hoss made sure that everything was, you know, together. But if you needed anything, you needed your equipment tailored, you needed gloves, shoes, it didn't matter. You know, Hoss was like, listen, I got it. You know, let me call your rep. If, like, you had a shoe deal and your shoes went back there, call your rep, make sure your shoes are there. You know, he was just a Paul. I keep on saying Paul. Hoss was just his name is Paul, people, yes.
But how many people call him Paul?
We call him Hoss. It's just, well, Hoss was a good guy, man. You can sit in his office, shoot the stuff, and, you know, he was just close. You know, that whole team from 97 to 04, that was truly a close-knit team in that locker room. It was, you know, that's why, you know, it was so hard when people, you know, got traded or released. It was just so hard because we all were so close and we all grew up, you know, here in Nashville together. So, Paul, you know, Hoss is a good guy. And, you know, it was Joy as well, and Joy's still there. You know, I wonder if they're going to elevate Joy now because Joy's been there. I can remember when Joy was a young kid running around doing his job, and he's still there. So I wonder if they're going to elevate. You know, you would think that if Joy's still there, they're going to elevate Joy now to the head equipment guy. But I don't know. I'm just saying. But, you know, I wish Hoss nothing but, you know, further success in whatever he chooses to do. His son was working there for a while. I remember his son when he was little. He ended up growing up taller than me. And it's just a delight to see people that were here when you first got here with you. And we all were young. And then you go over there, you know, years later after I come back from Baltimore, and you look at their kids, and their kids are grown now, and their kids are helping out on the football field. It's great. So, happy for Hoss that he got the opportunity to spend that long with a franchise, but sad that, you know, however it happened, it's just sad that he's not going to be in the building anymore.
I don't know him at all. I just in seeing, you know, how this works with a lot of teams, some people may not understand the person like that who's wrong. Like, you have to know everybody. Exactly. I have to know everything about what you like about your gloves, your mm-hmm. shoes, your socks. Not only you, but the other 53,
yeah,
55, you know, all the guys that are hurt, all the guys in the practice squad. I got to take care of them. I got to delegate. The amount of stuff, and I see this in hockey too, the amount of stuff that a team takes on the road. I can remember one time in college, our 7-foot center brought 2 left shoes on a road trip. So whose problem is that? Is that his problem? No. The managers have got to go find, hey, look, I got to go get this guy a pair of shoes, mm-hmm. right? But just think about the responsibility. You're not responsible for your own shoes, mm-hmm. right? At the major league level, they bring all your stuff, mm-hmm. right? So think about how you've got to be on top of things to execute that job year in, year out. I've just come to appreciate those guys a lot. And, you know, you get to know each other very, very well over a long period of time. It's almost like they're part of your family because you're around them every day.
They are. And the fun part about this is, you know, just sort of thinking back on some things, because there are people at that organization that have been there for a long time, whether it's John Takahashi, who I knew John Takahashi in college. He was, a part of the training staff at Michigan State. So when I moved into Nashville, I look up, there's Takahashi too, and I'm happy, like, that's my guy, Tak, you know? And then, you know, and there's other people, and then Tina Tuggle, who's been there forever. People like that you build relationships with, and then you just see how their careers continue to advance, and you're just happy for them. But I can remember, you know, having our bags in there and, you know, our equipment bags to be, you know, the Friday after we get off the field to get ready to go to the game, you throw all your stuff in there. And the equipment guys, you know, they got to make sure, even though you throw all your stuff in there, they still got to make sure, okay, they got to go through your locker, yeah. Okay, is this mouthpiece in there? Do we need an extra pair of shoes? Like, you know, it was whether it's Steve McNair, I got to make sure Steve has all his stuff. Whether it's me, you got to make sure, you know, Mace has his extra gloves. And is this mouthpiece in there? Mace, you got your mouthpiece? You throw everything in there? Yeah, I did. But then they go back and they make sure.
Double check.
They look through
check.
Your locker to make sure everything that you need for the game is in the bag. Because like Willie said, if it's not, it's, yes, I should have put it in there. But then it's their responsibility sort of to make sure you have what you need once you go out on the field. So, again, it's a thankless job, and we would always, you know, at the during the holiday times, we would all, you know, put our money in the pool. Everybody, it was mandatory that everybody on the team would put X amount of dollars in, and then allow the equipment people and everybody else to sort of divvy it up. And then, if you wanted to give extra, say to Hoss or John Takahashi or Joy, you could, but because their job is a thankless job. Nobody thinks about the equipment guy until you have 2 left shoes and you don't have 2, you know, right shoe and a left shoe. Then it's like, oh, or guys slip and then everybody's saying, well, why doesn't he have his correct shoes? Well, it isn't the equipment guy's fault. The player should have put 2 or 3 pair of shoes, because they tell you at the beginning of the week, like, this is the surface we're playing on. This is what's going to be like. Make sure you put in screw-ins and molded bottoms. So if somebody throws in all molded bottoms and no screw-ins, we're blaming not us, but people are saying, well, why doesn't he have his shoes? And everybody look at the equipment guy. Well, it's really not the equipment guy's fault. It's the player's fault. So they get blamed for things that they shouldn't, and they don't get praised for the stuff that they should get praised for.
And it seems like it's the kind of job that it's not easy, and it's
thankless, it's not
and it's
easy.
Hard, and it's long days. So once you find a guy that you trust,
mm-hmm.
you stick with him.
Yeah.
And it seems to me, and I don't know Hoss, but it seems to me everything that I've read is that he is basically ingrained within the fabric of the mm-hmm. Tennessee Titans, Houston Oilers organization. He's been there for 40 years.
As soon as you go in that building, Caroline, first guys people run to or it's Hoss. It's like I would rather go, you know, you come through the front, they let you in, you come to I would rather go straight to the equipment room or the training room because I those are the people I know. So it's like you go in there and you talk to them or you see them on the field when you first get there. And those are the people you try to you beeline for. You may talk to some people before you get them. But like when I see Hoss or John Takahashi from a distance, I start smiling because it's like, you know, we've been through all of this together, you know, and I know. My feelings are the same for just about every player that has come through that Titan organization, especially the guys that started in 1997 or 1996 or 95 when Hoss first started on.
So why would Vrabel fire him?
I don't know. And I don't – I hate to, on this one, you know, assume or whatnot. It's just I don't know because – unless there was something, and I don't even want to say that, but you just don't understand why. Because it's not like, you know, was guys having equipment problems or are you going to bring the injuries on? It's just like, yeah.
And
like,
we don't,
why,
well, to be clear, yeah. I just read the article that Paul Kuharsky put out on it. It's not clear if it was like he did something wrong and was fired. His contract did expire and they decided renewed. For whatever reason, we're not going to give you a new contract. So I don't know. It could be any number of things. I don't know if it was a quote firing or, you know, sometimes you're fired conveniently when your contract is up. You don't want to can the guy in the middle of it, but you just kind of come to a conclusion it's time to try something else. So any number of things are possible here.
Or it could be just, you know, okay, his contract is up now, you know, Joey, who's been here, you know, 20 some years as well. Now we give you an opportunity to sit in that seat that Hoss sat in for, you know, 20 plus years. You know, you look at that. If that was indeed the case, then you're sort of like, okay, I get it. Because, you know, Hoss has been, you know, the head guy. Joey's been the guy that has been underneath Hoss. And now it's Joey's turn to sort of elevate. And I don't necessarily see anything wrong with that because these two guys have been working together for so long. And if that indeed happens, I'm sure Hoss got to be happy for Joey that now he gets an opportunity to be the head guy. Now, if Joey's not the head guy, then okay, there's something else, you know. So,
and I kind of want to get into that, the reason why. And is this an individual instance, or is this indicative of maybe more moves to come? And I want to get into that coming up next. And, of course, your thoughts as well. 615-737-1025. It's Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 1025-1065.
I think there's a consensus that I don't know how overt they're ever really going to be about it. And, again, you're going to continue to hear over and over from Rand Carson on this idea of collaboration. But I, you know, I think this is all designed for the power center of the roster to be in Mike's hands in terms of, look, what does Mike want, you know, in terms of the players, how does Mike want the coaching staff look? How does he, you know, the process I think can obviously be affected by Rand. I think it would be, but we talked about this early on that I don't think I've ever seen, look, coaches don't survive a general manager losing the job and not gain, particularly successful coaches, I want to say, by the way. So Mike's had the track record, okay, there. And by the way, Mike also, not only track record internally and what he's done on the field, but the external respect for Mike being somebody that the Titans ever, for whatever reason, parted company with him, he would be unemployed for a nanosecond, okay? He would have another head coaching job. Maybe faster than the 6 days that it took Andy Reid to have another head coaching job when he left Philly. That kind of a situation, it shifts additional power to the head coach. And, you know, look, I think they're being very, you know, diplomatic, as they should. I think it's a good working relationship right now. I think Rand and Mike are still getting to know each other. I think they've been above board about the fact that it's not like two guys who have had this long track record of knowing each other and this wealth of experiences, you know, running into each other in the past. And it's two individuals who are still getting to know each other right now. And
there you go. That was Charles Robinson, Yahoo Sports, on Robbie and Rex Road this morning on his interpretation of the balance of power. Rand Carthon, Mike Vrabel, Amy Adams Strunk. He says he thinks that all of this, all of the movements and the hiring of Rand Carthon was designed for Mike Vrabel to be the HBIC, the head one in charge. So I think that's interesting. And I look at this isolated incidents. And again, if you haven't seen the news, the Titans have parted ways, or at least did not renew Paul Hoska, his contract. He was a longtime equipment manager. He's been with the Titans all the way back to the Oilers days in 1983, did not renew his contract.
Think about how far back that is. 1983, Houston Oilers, that's not a real good Oilers team. That's post-Bum Phillips. That's pre-Warren Moon. That's like Oliver
that's
Luck.
Crazy.
That's like Andrew Luck's dad, Oliver Luck.
Uh-huh.
Not some great. I can remember being a teenager in Florida, the Buccaneers, who were very bad most of the time. They had an awful team. The Oilers were just as bad. Oliver Luck was the quarterback. So I'm guessing Haas was at this game. And they called it the Toilet Bowl in the big sombrero, the old Tampa Stadium. Both teams were like competing for the number one pick.
The number one pick.
And it was like, we might be better off losing this game. We'll pick in front of that. But it was that's a long time ago is
that's
what I'm getting at. He has been with that organization through a lot. Imagine just going through the 4 years, D-Mace, last year in Houston,
yeah,
Memphis, Vanderbilt,
that was
new
bad.
Stadium. That period of time for any equipment manager, think about
tough.
What you had to deal with there.
Yeah, it was tough.
And think about the number of players that he has seen go through this organization.
Yes.
I mean, and
Mike Munchak, the player, Mike Munchak, the head coach.
Right.
Like, he saw it all.
He has been, I mean, he's a for lifer. Mm-hmm. So, in D-Mace, you said, you know, maybe it was because they wanted to promote the guy underneath him. And I look at it like, if it's a guy that's been there for this long and is beloved so much, which is what it sounds like from you and from every article and tweet and anything from any former Titan player has said about him, then you can find a way to keep him. But it sounded like Vrabel didn't want to renew the contract, walked in and said, hey, we are not moving on with you. There's Charles Robinson saying he thinks that all of these offseason moves, at least as far as the front office is concerned, is designed so Mike Vrabel can be in power. So I wonder, is this just one of many big moves and big changes in the quote-unquote Mike Vrabel era? Are the Tennessee Titans going to look very different, both from the inside the locker room of guys that fans maybe have never even heard of, all the way to on-the-field moves, player moves, personnel moves, draft moves? Are they all going to have different DNA in this quote-unquote Mike Vrabel era?
Well, if what is being said has any validity, then yes, this organization will start to resemble more of what, you know, the head coach wants, whether it's, you know, coaches on the staff, whether it's those that are in the equipment room, whether it's those that are in the training room, those that are in the weight room, anybody within that building that has anything to do with the players. And I'm not talking about, you know, the people that are, you know, administrative people upstairs. I'm just talking anybody that deals with the players on a day-to-day basis. You know, it's going to resemble more of the head coach and what he wants. And, you know, from that regards, that's, I mean, you know, it's not a bad thing unless you start to get outside of your lane. You start convincing people or coercing people to do things that they would normally do, i.e. the training staff. Sort of nudging them to get players back quicker than what they need to. I think to me that's you know, getting outside of your lane. You didn't go to school to be in that lane. You know, if you did, great, then be in it. And if it parlayed into a head coaching job, then great. But I tend to think that, nah, you didn't take any classes that would qualify you as a trainer, you know, the training staff. So if you start to itch your way in their lane, that's when problems occur. But if not, then I think, you know, everything will start to resemble what Mike Vrabel wants. And again, that's not a bad thing. You know, these are people that, you know, the players interact with every day, and he wants to make sure that they're there. Their first goal or their first thing is, we're here for the players. That's it. If you're not here for the players to make the players better and to make their life a little bit easier once they step in this building, then you don't need to be in this building. I want to hire people that are going to make sure that our players need have everything that they need so when they go out on that field, they can play, you know, to the best of their abilities. So if that is indeed the case, then great. Bring them all in. If Mike wants to hire them all and they working toward one common goal, then great. But if he starts to want to be in his lane over here and his lane over here and her lane over here, then that's when you're going to have a problem. That's when you're going to start seeing people leave because they're like, we can't do our job.
How would you feel with your relationship with Haas if you were in the locker room right now and Mike Vrabel made that move?
I would be, because to me, Haas is like a player. Because he's been, it's like he's a part of us. Like he's in the locker room with us. His office is locker room. Well, I don't know how the new locker room look, but the old locker room is you go in, you can see Haas at his desk right there. You know, there was a glass, you know, in the door you got to walk through. But Haas, when you walked in, you saw, if Haas was at his desk, you saw him, what he was, you know, whatnot. So he was a part, he was an extension of us. He was a part of us. So as a player, I would be highly disappointed. And, you know, as a veteran guy or a leader on that team, you would sort of like, especially somebody like Ryan Tannehill or Derrick Henry that, you know, And some other guys, you know, whatnot, that Ben Jones, that relied so heavy on him as far as your equipment and everything else. They're old. You would want to let them know, like, this is why we did it, you know, and sort of move on from there. But I'm sure those guys are like, they're in shock because the guys that don't even play no more there, they're like, wow, Haas of all people, we would have never thought that. So I'm sure there are guys in the locker room now that are like, man, ooh, man, we better, because if they can get rid of Haas, they can get rid of any one of us, you know? So, but it's unfortunate. So, because even as a former player, you feel like, man, that came out of nowhere, you know?
Right.
So,
and how would you feel about Mike Vrabel? Because I think about that move. That's a move that you think would be unpopular, at least from your opinion. And I'm sure those guys in the locker room now feel the same way.
How would I feel about Vrabel? I mean, listen, I am the type of person that I can play under any coach. It doesn't matter to me. As long as there's that mutual respect, then I can, because I'm going to do my job. You don't have to motivate me to work hard. I'm going to work hard. You don't have to motivate me to do this or do that. I'm going to do it. So whatever coach you bring in, whether it Mike Vrabel, whether it was Jeff Fisher, Bill Belichick, meaning Billick, whether it was Harbaugh, it didn't matter. You know, as long as it was that mutual respect, we were good because I was going to go out and do what I needed to do to make sure I gave the team all that I have. But I wouldn't look at Mike any less. I wouldn't want to know why. But then after that, it's like I feel bad, but, you know, the ship got to keep going. The train got to keep going. Just like, you know, Haas might have felt bad, you know, when some players got cut. I'm sure he felt real bad when Steve McNair got cut. You know, when they but his thing is, I got to keep moving. I got to keep doing my job, you know. And that's how players are. It's like, you hate to see it happen. You know, I can remember when Randall Godfrey was cut or Kevin Dyson. You know, you hated it. Like, what? Like, but you understood that, man, the train got to keep going. You know, so.
Yeah, and that's tough. And if this is the Mike Vrabel era, if this is Mike Vrabel making decisions now, Mike,
but don't we think he had that? Like, is it possible he's always had that decision? Like, I don't think he just got the jurisdiction to change the equipment guy. Is that's possible anyway?
I don't know,
but it's possible, right?
If he had the jurisdiction to change the equipment guy before, why now?
Because I don't think because the contract was up. I think it looks a little bit better to not renew the contract than to fire someone.
But after that long?
Yeah.
You never know. You never know what's going on in there. I'm just saying we can't just
Haas
come to a
was
conclusion.
Like, I want this to be my last year. You know, I want Joy to be able to be the guy. I don't know. It could be several different reasons. You know, so, but you do hate, as a former player, guy that, you know, spent time, you know, in that building, spent time with Haas.
Right.
You hate to see that happen.
And we wish him the best.
Yep.
Ask D-Mace coming up next. The best question for D-Mace will get an opportunity to win a pair of tickets to see Fitz and the Tantrums at Brooklyn Bowl on February 14th. We'll get into your questions for D-Mace coming up next. It's Caroline Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
G-Mace. He played 15 years in the NFL.
Quick throw. Derek Mason.
He had over 12,000 receiving yards.
And there he goes. 80 yards for the touchdown.
And now you can ask him anything. Question about football or life? Now's your time to ask D-Mace.
We'll welcome you in.
Now on Caroline, Willie, and
D-Mace.
On 102.5 and 106.3, The Game and the Game Nashville app.
Ask D-Mace is brought to you by Curation CBD. You can find their healing products at curationcompany.com. Curation CBD products curated for life. Use promo code DMASE, D-M-A-S-E, at CuriationCompany.com for 25% off Curation CBD products. Send in your questions for DMASE, 615-737-1025 is our phone number, and you will get the opportunity to win a pair of tickets to see Fitz and the Tantrums at Brooklyn Bowl on Tuesday, February 14th. It's one of my favorite concert venues.
Ah.
That is a nice little Valentine's Day night, I think, for somebody.
Love week. Love week.
Since it is love week, after all, let's get into your questions for D-Mace. Phone lines driven by WilsonCountyHunter.com. Ben is up next. What's up, Ben?
Hey, how are you guys doing?
Good.
Well.
So my question is, how does it feel to be in Madden, and what's that kind of process like for a retired player to get into it? Does someone contact you from the game, or do you ask, say, hey, can I be in it? I'm just kind of curious.
Yeah, thanks, Ben.
Thank you, Ben. As a player, when you're on Madden, it's just like the greatest thing. You know, you can play with, especially if you're a starter, it's like you can play with yourself and, you know, on the game, and you're playing with your, and it's like,
did you play with yourself?
I didn't play it a lot.
Be careful how we word the
game. Yeah, exactly. On Madden.
On Madden, people. On Madden.
Get your head out of the
I played as myself on Madden, people. I played as myself on Madden. And, you know, sometimes it's like, man, I'm faster than that. Or I'm, you know, I caught more. Man. So you always kind of.
Remember that commercial way back with, was it Robert Brooks from the Packers, the guy that, it was a Brett Favre's receiver. And he tore up his knee. And he was doing that. Like he was playing the game and he had a big knee injury. And in the commercial, he gets caught from behind. He's like, wait a minute.
I'm faster than that.
Yeah, that doesn't show my breakaway speed.
No,
that was a hilarious commercial. Yeah, and the guy, the nerdy guy who made the game was like, well, you know, we have your speed down at like 83 now or something, whatever it was.
Because he got injured.
And he's basically just like, come on.
So guys go back and forth. But as a retired player, they did contact me. I think it was it last summer? They did contact me and asked if I would give them permission to, because they got to pay you for this. So asked with the permission to be on the Madden game. And it was only certain guys that they reached out to. And I was like, great. You know, it's like, it's not like I went and bought it again, but just to, you know, have your name and your likeness and someone being able to play as you on a video game, that's kind of cool. Even as I age, you know, he's been
you're immortal on the video.
I'm always
that's what's
there.
Cool exactly yeah, that's so, really cool.
And you know, it's like, now I'm hoping somebody please put me on the Indianapolis Colts with Peyton Manning or either bring Peyton Manning or have Steve McNair and Peyton Manning on the same team and throw it to me, please.
Yeah, you know? Darryl, that'd be cool. So that way you're can live on forever.
Exactly.
Do you get paid royalties from Madden still?
Not still.
But did you?
But yeah, I did. And every player did.
That's pretty cool.
You know, during that time. So some players got more than the others, and deservedly so. If you were one of those guys like the Bradys and whatnot,
right,
then you got a little bit more money. So, but no, it's great to have that. You know, it's now if my son was a Madden guy, he can go on Madden and play as me on a video game.
Say, Dad, you were pretty good.
Yeah.
Or he could get on you. Yeah. Dad, you dropped the pass. I lost to the Colts. Or you know,
I tell him I never
tried to throw
a pass.
To you. I can't throw to you again in the clutch. What's going on?
I tell him I never dropped a pass. Not that I remember anyway.
So the game was flawed then. The game was
exactly.
flawed.
Cody Texan asks, how long do you think it takes for an offensive line to build chemistry, and what variables go into establishing chemistry?
Who was that again?
That was Cody.
Cody. Man, in that right there is a good question. Because people think just all of a sudden when you throw an offensive line together, these guys, you know, they're good to go. Or, you know, okay, you can take one guy away and insert another guy and everything is fine. No, it doesn't work like that with offensive linemen. It takes a bit, you know, a minute for those guys to gel. Now, some guys, it takes a little bit it happens a little bit faster. But, you know, offensive linemen, they tell you, like, listen, it's going to take a minute, you know, for us because we all got to be – it's like we all got to be on the same page with everything. We all got to basically see the same thing. You know, when the center is basically calling out protections, and then you got to be able to see it as a tackle or guard. You got to work simultaneously with one another at times. So it takes a minute for offensive linemen to get to that point where, you know, it's like we've built this camaraderie. We built this sort of – it's like a, what do they call it? The dancers, synchronized dance. Yeah, swimmers. Yeah. It takes them a minute, right, to
they
get
are
everything
water dancers.
Exactly. So it takes them a minute. They don't just jump in the pool and they got everything together. That's just like offensive linemen. They're like synchronized swimmers. It's like you got to be able, because if one person is off, the quarterback could be laying on his back and the ball could be going toward the end zone. Somebody could pick it up and score. So it takes a minute for those guys, but once they get it down pat, man, oh, man, you see what's happening in Philadelphia. And the Titans have been through that too, man. Listen, they've had some really good offensive linemen, offensive lines in this franchise's history. And it was because they built it the right way, and those guys were able to stay together for a long time and play. I look at Bruce Matthews, B-Hop, Benji, Zach. Who else am I missing? Willie. Stefanowski was here for a while. Long. These guys, man, it took a minute. But once they got together and once they got that thing together, man, those guys were great.
Let's say the Titans bring back just Nate Davis, mm-hmm. and you've got four new offensive linemen in 2023. How long do you think it would take that? And I know it's different for every mm-hmm. person, every player, depending on what level they're at. A season? A few games?
I think it'd take them a part of the season, if not the whole season. Yep. To really
new OC, get, new offensive yeah, line coach.
To really yeah, get it true. Down. Now, they will play good. I think, you know, they're capable of playing good ball. But to get it to the point where they want it as an offensive line and offensive line coach, it may take a full year.
Yeah, that'll be a big theme that we'll be watching for, really. All season long, mm-hmm. right?
Totally.
With the new OC, new offensive line coach, mm-hmm. and probably some new linemen in there. We got some wisecrackers on the text line here, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Wes in Clarksville. Remember, this is Wes. Don't kill the messenger. They had video games when D-Mace played?
Yes,
Wait
Wes.
A minute. Come on, Wes. Jeez.
Yes, we had video games, Wes. But we had, you know, we had not
you guys
only.
Used to play in the locker room all the time.
Oh,
I remember
yes,
that.
Man.
Bruce
not only
Matthews,
Wes.
Who was like the oldest guy on the team, he was playing, he was all in.
Yeah, we would find, especially during training camp. That's where we would play it a lot during training camp. Because we had that idle time, like 3 hours, and, you know, whether you're sleeping or whatnot. But we had more than just Madden. It was NFL Blitz, which was fun, you know, because you were able to take a guy and spin him around in the air and then throw him. You know, it was just a lot of fun stuff in those games. But, yeah, it was NFL Blitz, Madden, and I think it may have been another one.
C from Franklin says, D-Mace, can you ask Willie this question? What is the plan?
They're still trying to figure
Let's
out the plan.
Let's not go there today, okay?
Throwback. We're going to have a new plan this offseason.
You're dead, Willie.
One texter texts in and asks, do players get excited when the team brings in or drafts players from the college that they went to? And do players that went to the same college stick together?
Yeah, I was, you know, when they brought, you know, they brought a few Michigan State guys in.
Are you, like, automatically drawn to them?
Yeah, because they're Sparties, you know. They're Spartan dogs. And you know, as soon as you come in and you recognize they're Spartan dogs, you know you – you know, dap them up, and anything you need, I'm here. And you just try to take care of those individuals that come from your university, you know, because you sort of know what you know, what their plight was, what they had to go through, what they experienced there at the university, because you experienced some of the same things, if not all of them.
Maybe same coaches.
Exact same coaches. So, you know, you want to bring those guys in, and, you know, but if they're on defense, you still want to, you know, teach them a little lesson.
Exactly.
Here's a good one from Troy, not Tony. He's got his handle there, but I'm going to give a different spin on this, just a slight one. What's the general conversation on the sideline through a game by the players? All football or no? I've heard some really funny stories about during the TV timeouts that are so long. Like when you're at a football game and you're in the stands, you're like, my God, another TV timeout. This is forever.
Gotta go to the bathroom, get a pretzel.
Come on. Let's get on with it. But I've heard some funny stories of sometimes a song will come on if you're just sitting in that huddle.
Oh, yeah.
Does anybody come to mind like a funny story or a wisecracker that would kind of lighten it up?
I mean, it was always, you know, not always, but a lot of times it was, you know, in between, you know, timeouts. If a music is playing, some guy starts singing and dancing, or if it's really cold, it's like, man, people are trying to rush to the bench to grab a coat just for that 30 or 45 seconds to get warm, and then they'll wait to the last minute to throw the coat off and run back outside or run back on the field. Or, you know, on a bench when you're sitting there and say the defense is on and you've discussed whatever you need to discuss, you know, guys are just talking about any and everything half the time. And, you know, the best time is during preseason, though, because it's like, okay, you get your – as starters, you get your, you know, five plays in. Then you come back to the sideline. You're looking for sunflower seeds, you know, to or some candy. I would always – like when I was here, I would just get these sunflower seeds, and we would all like, who got the sunflower seeds? Who got the sunflower seeds? Whether it was, you know, flavored ones – I love the flavored ones. Whether it was sour cream or barbecue, love the flavor. So, and that was another thing. Hoss always had the seeds in the thing, in the trunk. So we would go to the trunk, get the seeds, and shells would be everywhere on the field, and you spin them everywhere, spin them in a cup. But when I left here and went to Baltimore, it was like, all right, I'm trying to graduate from the seeds, because if you eat too many seeds, you put them in the top of your lip, it started to make your gums raw.
Believe me, as a minor league baseball player, we killed a lot of times with the seeds, so I know all about that.
I went from seeds to candy. So I had my little stash of candy that I would pack during preseason, and everybody would go, hey, you got the candy? You got the candy?
You got the
candy. I was the plug. I was the plug for the candy. Like, y'all need candy? I'm right here, you know? Some guys would go and eat hot. It was fun on the sideline, especially during preseason, because that's when you could be a little bit more relaxed. During the games, during the regular season, it wasn't quite like that, but you still had your sunflower seeds that you ate every once in a while.
We are right back into your questions for D-Mace coming up next. And remember, the best question for D-Mace will win a pair of tickets to see Fitz and the Tantrums. Well, that was tough to get out. At Brooklyn Bowl on Tuesday, February 14th. Caroline, really, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. I gotta stay. Ask D-Mace is presented by Curation CBD. Find their healing products at CurationCompany.com. Curation CBD products curated for life. Use promo code DMASE, D-M-A-S-E, at CuriationCompany.com for 25% off Curation CBD products. Remember, the best question for D-Mace will win a pair of tickets to see Fitz and the Tantrums at Brooklyn Bowl on February 14th. So happy Valentine's Day to you. Gunner texts in and says, D-Mace, how often did you and the receivers in your receiving core handle each other? Targets when someone's in a slump, was in a tough love motivation, just trying to send some positive vibes, just kind of lifting up the rest of the receivers around you?
It was a constant, you know, thing, whether it be out on a football field during practice or during a game. where you're, you know, motivating someone or trying to get someone up if they may have dropped a pass or two or, you know, ran a wrong route or whatnot. If you're in a meeting rooms and, you know, it's a little bit more, when you're in a meeting rooms, it's a little bit more intimate because then you can sort of open up a little bit more and sort of talk because it's just y'all. It's usually, you know, five or six receivers and then a coach. So we would talk about everything, any and everything. It didn't matter. For me at least, when I became sort of the elder statesman, I felt that it was my responsibility to make sure those guys knew exactly what was going on and if they needed encouragement or they would encourage me. It was reciprocated. But it was a tight-knit group, and I enjoyed my wide receiver locker rooms. You know, I was frank with them and I was honest with them when they needed it. I remember walking in a room one day. We were in Baltimore, and we had not, as a group, we were not playing the way that we should have been playing as a group. And I remember walking in there one day, and I think Coach Shaw that was our coach, or was it Coach Johnson? It might have been Coach Shaw. And, you know, Coach Shaw, he was young too at the time, and he's our receiver coach, which, you know, he was great. Now, obviously, he went on and became the coach at Stanford, did a great job there, or is doing a great job there. But I remember walking in the room one day, and we hadn't been playing well. And I said, listen, guys, all of y'all, it was like five guys in there, and I can name all five of them. But I'm like, listen, you guys, we all got to pick our play up. Y'all, each one of y'all in here have abilities that I don't have. Each one of y'all in here are better athletes than I am. And I was being honest and frank with them. And I said, but the one thing that is holding y'all back, the one thing that you know, is going to keep y'all from surpassing me in a sense is, you know, the consistency, the work ethic. Y'all got the talent. I would point at each and every, like, you're more talented to me. You're faster than me. You catch the ball. I would tell these guys, like, these are the attributes that y'all have that I don't have. Just being honest with them. I said, but one thing y'all are not getting is the work ethic and that having that dog in you, like, you're not going to work as hard as me. You're not. And I'm going to push you, and you need to push me. But the harder you push me, the harder I'm going to work. And you know what's going to happen? That's going to make you better as a player. But as far as physical talent, all y'all are more talented than me. All of them in that room was more talented than me. And I could say that with no hesitation. But I told them, so one thing that's stopping y'all is, you know, the work ethic and that dog mentality in y'all. Y'all got to develop that. Once y'all develop that, sky's the limit for y'all. And those guys started playing better. But that's how honest and real some rooms get. And I think a lot of rooms are, whether it be offensive line, D-line, secondary, especially secondary guys. I know I've heard some of those secondary guys go off on one another. It's like, man, are y'all really friends? Like, they held each other accountable. And that's what I wanted to do in the receiver room. Just, I hold y'all accountable. Y'all hold me accountable.
This is a good creative. Now, this is a person that wants the tickets. Now, the problem is I don't see his name here somewhere, but he said, D-Mace, what were the biggest fits and tantrums you witnessed by players or coaches on the field? Trying to get the fits and the tantrums tickets.
Ah,
see?
All right.
Okay.
Got
okay.
it.
Okay. I like how you're thinking.
You said the stupidest thing ever. You
come on, Nick.
The
don't be a party pooper.
Probably.
Guy's trying to be creative.
I'm trying to think. I've had some myself, and I listen again. I'm a situation, and I hate to bring this up, but hell, listen, receivers, we are divas. That's just what we are.
Okay. You have to be.
It's like, listen, two situations. We were in Carolina, And this is when I was in Baltimore. Now, I may have had some situations here in Nashville, but it was just a little bit different. And I remember, you know, Heimerdinger saying, listen, here, you call the plays, Mason. Here, you call them. And I'm like, nah, I'm going to buy it. But because I had just got finished, you know, pitching a fit over something. I don't know what it was. And Heimerdinger was like, here, you call the plays. Here. So, but he and I would always go back and forth. But we had respect for one another. And I enjoyed Mike as a offensive coordinator. And he helped my career a lot when he got here. But I can remember being in Baltimore. And we were playing the Carolina Panthers. And we just wasn't having a good game. And this is Joe's. I think this might have been Joe's rookie year or second year. And we end up running this double. We end up running shallow crosses. And one guy goes on the top. One guy goes underneath. We try to get a pick. And you throw it to the open guy. Well, as a receiver, I come underneath the one guy. The other guy goes on top. I think it was Mark Clayton. He goes over the top. And I come open. Or it might have been Ty Heap. I come open, but I might have come open a little bit too late. And he had already thrown the ball. And boy, oh boy. And we didn't get the first down. And boy, oh boy, did I pitch a fit. Oh, my goodness. Joe and I got into it, finger pointing, grabbing each other. And he and I just got into it. It's such a big deal that, you know, in the locker room, they asked us about it. And Joe and I, after that, Joe and I sort of squashed everything. And I felt real bad as a veteran guy. I felt extremely bad. I'm sitting on the bench, and this is no lie. I'm sitting on the bench, and I'm talking to my chaplain there, Reggie. And I'm like, man, I really messed up. Like, I shouldn't have done that. And he was like, don't worry about it. Just go talk to him, and I'm sure everything will be fine. I wouldn't talk to Joe, and everything was fine. We dapped up and hugged and whatnot. So that happened. And I remember another time, we were at Baltimore Stadium at home game, and again we weren't playing well, and I'm like, man, damn this. And this is what I said. Damn this. And this is the second half, and I'm like, damn this. I come back to the bench. I take off my shoulder. I'm getting ready to take off my shoulder pads. And in Baltimore, the locker room was, you go in the locker room right behind the bench, so you can go back and nobody really sees you. So I'm pissed. I'm just like, man, they're not getting me involved in, and I hadn't been involved in the game at all up until this point. And this, and when you're talking about after halftime, and I'm like, man, damn this. So I unbuckle my pads. I'm walking down. I'm getting ready to take off my pads and walk in the locker room. Ed Reed grabs me from the shoulder pads. Like, man, don't do that. Don't do that. Don't do that. They need you. We need you, man. We need you. Come back up here, and everything will be all right. Sure enough, I end up catching more passes. We end up winning the game.
So he talked you off the ledge.
So he talked me off the ledge. So there's a lot of things that goes on. That's why Ed's like my dude even to this day. That's my guy. But there are a lot of things like coaches going at one another.
Tensions are high.
It is high because it's a tense situation. That whole game for 60 minutes is tense. Whether you're winning or not, there's going to be tension. Coaches going at the coaches, arguing at coaches, offensive coaches arguing at defensive coaches are offensive players arguing at defensive players arguing at offensive players arguing at one another, you know, based upon a play. But then as fast as it starts, it ends. And then you never think about it. Like, you go back in the locker room, don't even know that y'all have an argument.
It was like foggy.
Yeah, it's just like, okay, if somebody bring it up, be like, what are you talking about? Oh, you talking about, did that happen last game or this game? No, we saw y'all, oh, man, that was nothing. Just keep on going.
It's no
big deal. Exactly. So, but yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on.
Pretty good stuff on fits and tantrums. I like the creativity.
Yeah, that was a good one. Yeah. Good thought there. That was Ask D Mace. Shout out to D Mace. Love to always get in his perspective. But coming up next, we have got a quarterback carousel. So, looking at every option, and I feel like I really looked into every possible option that I'm going to bring up to Willie and D-Mace, who they think is going to be the likeliest or not likeliest, if that's even a term, quarterback for the Tennessee Titans next year. We'll get into that coming up next. It's Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 1025, 1063, The Game.
Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21+.
Spring is sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big.